My name is Dr. Christine Crawford, and I am the Associate Medical Director for the National Alliance on Mental Illness, also known as NAMI.
What inspired you to get into the mental health field?
Well, when I went to medical school and I was doing my clinical rotations, I started to notice that the patients who were experiencing more severe symptoms from their medical conditions were people who had pretty significant mental health related concerns that weren't being addressed by the medical team. A lot of these individuals were quite vulnerable, not only because of their medical issues, but because they just didn't have all of the social supports, the coping strategies, and what have you to navigate their day-to-day. And I started medical school already having a public health background, and it made me realize that if you were able to support the emotional well-being of individuals, then they'll be better able to take care of their physical well-being and be able to live meaningful and productive lives. And so I figured that as a physician that I could have a greater impact on the well-being not only of individual patients, but on families and on communities by being a psychiatrist. That was the reason why I decided to pursue this, because I know how important mental health is for overall physical health. And then also there's just the reality in terms of the lack of diversity within the field of psychiatry. Only 1 to 2% of psychiatrists are Black, and I imagined at the time that I could have a tremendous impact on reducing some stigma or issues related to engaging in mental health treatment by being a person of color. So that was another kind of motivating factor that led me to pursue a career in psychiatry.
What is it like working with kids in the field?
Working with kids is so amazing because I'm able to see a difference in the fact that if they're receiving intervention at an earlier stage in their overall trajectory, that we can have a profound impact on who they have the potential to become as adults. With adults, you know, it's interesting, it's satisfying, but adults are kind of who they are, right? But with kids, you're literally watching them become people over time right in front of your eyes. And so to be involved on that journey with them as they are better understanding who they are, understanding what are the tools and strategies and supports that they need in order to kind of live out all of their hopes and dreams, it's really nice. And so I have the opportunity to work with young kids who are now adults and to see how things kind of evolved over time with the right support. So it's nice to see that with kids, change is possible very quickly too. And to just provide that early intervention is just so encouraging. And when kids are doing well, families do well, communities do well. And so not only do I have the opportunity to work with kids, but I work with families, I work with communities, and that's a really meaningful part of my job. So even though I'm labeled as a child psychiatrist, I really am a psychiatrist that treats people across their entire lifespan. Because once you enter into adulthood, that doesn't mean I give up on you and say, you got to find another psychiatrist. But we follow people from childhood, young adulthood to adulthood. And that's been a real true joy of my job.
That made me think of my own situation. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder too when I was 37, and with treatment, it changed my life. So I always think, like, if I was younger, how would that affect my life? So it's great you talk to kids at such an early age.
Yeah, that such that they don't have to wonder, you know, themselves, you know, such that families don't have to wonder, because I feel like your story is just so commonplace. And we really do need to figure out how we can change the system such that it doesn't take someone to be in their 30s before they have a better understanding and appreciation of who they are and what supports they need in order to thrive. So that's what I love about working with kids.
What is it like helping others?
Oh, I love that question. What is it like helping others? It's what it's like is you feel very human because you are connecting to another human in a deep and meaningful way. And it's really a privilege to be able to see people and to work with people at a very vulnerable time in their life. You know, it really is a privilege because if they are experiencing a crisis and you are right there beside them, kind of assisting them through this crisis, even though they may not have any hope for themselves or see any light at the end of the tunnel, you are carrying that for them along the way. And I love sharing with patients that I work with that I know that you don't have hope right now, but I'm going to carry the hope for you and be on this journey with you. It's so powerful. And so what it's like, it feels like you're really alive, that you're really connecting to people in a deep and meaningful way. I know that other physicians may say something along those lines, but when we're dealing with social connections, when we're dealing with human emotion, these are things that can't be put into a bottle. These are things that can't be measured or tested, but they can be felt. And so it's a really powerful feeling that I experience that also helps better inform how it is I kind of walk my own journey in life in terms of my connections with my family, my friends, my own social emotional well-being. So it's a really, really powerful experience to connect with people on that deep way. And I don't take it for granted at all.
And also you have some big stuff coming up. I saw you wrote a book and it's coming out soon. How does that process work?
Yeah, so thank you for mentioning the book. So I wrote a follow-up book to Dr. Ken Duttworth's book that was called You Are Not Alone. And Dr. Ken Duttworth is the current chief medical officer for NAMI. And that book really does a beautiful job capturing what it is like to live with a mental health condition and to be on this journey of recovery and really talking about the tremendous resources that are available through NAMI. But what came out of that book was that there was a great desire in me to understand how to support kids and teenagers on that same journey, because there's a lot of things that are unknown, that are uncertain when it comes to mental health conditions in children. So when I was presented with this opportunity to write a book about youth mental health, it was really hard because it's such a huge topic. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want this book to be a regurgitation of the DSM-5, which is the manual that we use as mental health clinicians to diagnose certain conditions. I did not want this book to be that, but I wanted this book to really pave the way and to shed light on the path that caregivers can take and to be alongside their child on this path to getting them the supports that they need. A lot of caregivers believe that when it comes to youth mental health, you have to have all the right psychiatrists and therapists and interventions all in place, and you got to find the best. But this book is a reminder to caregivers that there are a lot of things that you can do as a caregiver and a lot of amazing resources that are available within your own community, whether it's a larger community within your town, county, or what have you, but also in the community of your family and your friends and the community that is of NAMI. So I interviewed over 80 people, including kids themselves, caregivers, teachers, who have been on this journey, sharing their words of wisdom about encouraging other people as they're trying to navigate and support their child who's experiencing a mental health condition. So this book is really shedding light on how to connect with your kid, how to understand your kid and the emotional challenges that they may face, how to tap into resources and supports, and how to understand mental health symptoms in children. So I hope that'll be a really helpful resource to people.
And with NAMI, what is it like working with that organization?
Yeah, working with NAMI is amazing because there's only two psychiatrists that are part of this whole organization. So NAMI is the country's largest grassroots organization that's dedicated to supporting and improving the lives of individuals who are living with mental health conditions. And we have 630 affiliates across the country. So I'm part of NAMI National, and each state has its own NAMI office. And then there are smaller affiliates that are providing programming in the community. So to be part of this organization that was started by mothers who had children who were living with schizophrenia, who were fed up by the lack of support for families, for their kids, to now seeing it kind of blossom into this really powerful movement of people with lived experience who are really advocating for what it is that they need as well as their loved ones need in order to live healthier lives. So it's really nice having an opportunity to step away from my clinical role in seeing patients and treating symptoms and prescribing medications to thinking about how can we think big picture and think about policy and advocacy work and thinking about educational offerings that we could provide people so that they have the tools that are necessary to make them feel empowered, that they can take care of and support their own mental health. So I love this organization. I think it's phenomenal. And I really want to make it such that if someone has a mental health related concern or a loved one does, that NAMI automatically pops into their mind. And it should be the first thing that they think of reaching out to if there are any mental health concerns. So that's what I love about NAMI, and I just really love the fact that we're having this conversation today so that more people are aware of this amazing organization.
And you do so much to help people's mental health, but what do you do to help your own mental health?
Fantastic question, right? And it's really hard because taking care of your mental health is an investment. It's a time investment, right? And you have to be really intentional about it too. And so what I've been challenged with is figuring out how to slow down, how to take a step back, and how to go inward, and how to kind of reflect on how I'm feeling in the moment, where I'm going, where I want to be, because I'm so accustomed to being on this hamster wheel, right? Yeah. And so what I've been trying to do is to make it more of these manageable, smaller moments to kind of engage in kind of some reflection rather than it being more of this performative self-care of like signing up for like a 6-week long Pilates class or doing some fancy yoga retreat or something. Because I always thought that it had to be big if you wanted to take care of your mental health. But I'm starting to realize that it's really these small moments, these kind of little moments that we have during our day that we can really maximize on. So I just try to kind of disconnect from my devices. I try to check in with myself. But then also, I love to binge watch various shows, reality TV shows. So that's the other way that I like to disconnect and take care of myself. So I have no shame in binge watching some reality TV show on the weekend.
What are some of the things that motivate you?
So I'm really motivated by, obviously, young people and the kind of the enthusiasm of young people, but also the sense of urgency as it relates to young people. I say all of this because we know that the average delay between onset of mental health symptoms and when people finally enter into treatment, it's on average 11 years. And kids don't have that sort of time. They do not have 11 years. Even when we're talking about months, you know, if someone were to experience symptoms of depression or anxiety and they're waiting a couple of weeks here and there, a couple of months, that's an academic quarter or a semester for a young person. They really don't have time. And so that's what really motivates me to figure out how we can get young people into care sooner rather than later so that they're not missing out not only on these opportunities to learn and to grow, but opportunities to connect with other people. Because that's what it's really all about for children and teenagers as well as adults. But it's really about connection. And if you are experiencing mental health symptoms that makes it difficult for you to connect with your peers, you're not going to be able to develop the set of skills and tools that are really needed to create a community around you, to have these social supports that are so necessary for navigating a variety of different stressors. So the sense of urgency that we see in kids and youth, and just knowing that they don't have time to waste, is something that really motivates me in the work that I do.
I've noticed when I've talked to high school students and college students, they are way more open to talk about their mental health with each other. Have you seen that to be the case as opposed to, you know, adults?
Well, I think that there is a generational difference as it relates to talking about mental health. I'm seeing that a lot of young people tend to be quite equipped with some psychologically minded language that they've been able to acquire on social media and other platforms. And a lot of high profile celebrities and what have you have been talking openly about their mental health conditions, their mental health journey on social media, on TV. And so this experience of disclosing your experience, talking about your lived experience, has been normalized among young people. And so it's easier for them to talk about what it is that they're going through amongst themselves. And then they go on social media and they see people who look like them, who are the same age, who are talking openly about some of their challenges and what they're doing to cope. Now, that's different for a lot of parents and caregivers and older generations who were not brought up that way. They were brought up to kind of pull yourself up by the bootstraps, keep it moving. You don't want to talk about your business to other people. You don't want to be judged negatively. And so it's really hard to kind of undo that socialization that was put in place since childhood for the older generation. And so oftentimes the younger generation bumps heads with the older ones just because of the way that they've been brought up to talk about mental health conditions. And so I've been really encouraging caregivers to initiate conversations with their kids about mental health by coming from a place of curiosity rather than asking a bunch of questions, rather than kind of doing detective work. You really should be curious about how it is your child is learning about mental health, how they understand their own mental health, so that you can learn about how they're thinking about these things, how they're coping with these very stressful situations that they're hearing about on the news, in the media, that may be contributing to their mental health. And then from your child, you can learn too about how you can support your own mental health. But as adults, we're really not in the habit of learning from young people, but we really should learn from our young people. They kind of got it right on this one.
Where do you want to see your mission, say, in the next 3 to 5 years?
Ooh. I want it such that every single school in America, starting from elementary school, has some sort of curriculum that focuses on developing effective coping strategies to deal with stress. I want it such that every elementary school has a curriculum that talks about emotions, social emotional development, because I do think it is critical for kids to learn at a very young age how they can support and take care of their mental health, because we know that having those tools and skills is so fundamental to being a human being and navigating the world. But yet we just assume that people figure it out on their own, right? And I really hope that as we continue to move forward, that we're really intentional about educating our kids about mental health, that we are creating environments that are supportive of being able to take care of your mental health. And I hope that we have adults who are able to model for our kids how to talk about their emotions, how to talk about strategies that they use to take care of their mental health, so that kids don't have to see me because there's only 8,300 to 9,000 child psychiatrists in the country. And I tell you, most of us are in the Northeast. We're in Boston. We hang out in Boston a lot, New York, Chicago, the West Coast. But there are so many communities across the country that just have a lack of access to good child mental health providers, lack of access to any child mental health providers. And so I don't mind if my kind of wait list shrinks. I don't mind if I have an open schedule, because what that means is that kids are doing well. They're taking care of themselves. They have the tools to be able to do so. So that's where I hope this mission can go into the future.
How can people reach out and learn more?
Well, check us out at NAMI.org. So that's NAMI.org. You can learn about our helpline that's available not only for adults, but for young adults and teens. The helpline is available via text, so you can learn about that amazing resource, as well as about our educational offerings, our support groups. And check us out at NAMI Communicate on both TikTok and Instagram, so you can be up to date about what it is that our organization is doing.